Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, started a pretty sobering discussion last time on the show.
Wasn't that fun? I mean, people should really go back and listen to it because it was very uplifting. It's not depressing at all.
Expecting the unexpected. And something I've definitely learned as I've hosted this show with you for now a number of years is estate planning is not just about what to do when you die and who gets what. It's a lot about how to plan for unexpected things that happen while you're still alive.
Right.
And you can deal with that with your estate plan.
Yeah, and it's really not unexpected as what we were talking about last week, which is why the discussion was so fun and lively, is because we can expect that we're going to have a health incident. We know statistically that if you are 85 years old, that a third of 85-year-olds have some type of cognitive impairment already. And so those numbers are very high. It's not unexpected to have a health issue. It's not unexpected to have cognitive decline. But yet we treat it as if it is unexpected. Mm. It's like, oh, this is such a shock that I had a health incident in my 70s. Really? So good estate planning, we need to bring this to the forefront because the first thing I am supposed to do in estate planning is protect my client first. Number one deal, protect the client. How do we make sure that they have access to their finances, that they have proper people around them to make sure their bills are paid, and also proper individuals that will deal with doctors, make medical decisions when they're unable to? So this is a lion's share of what estate planning is supposed to do. But yet the main focus is always, who gets my money? Okay, fine. They'll just spend it when they get it. So don't worry about that so much. The issue is, how do we preserve what you have to ensure that you have enough during your lifetime to care for you? That is the big question, and that is what we can expect. We can expect that we live in a fallen world, and these bodies were not created to live forever. Our spirit was, but not our bodies. So therefore, we are in a shell that wears down and begins to wear out. It is intended to fall back to the earth, dust to dust. So therefore, why are we so shocked when we have health incidences and when we have memory impairment? This is what we are to expect. So we need to have a plan to ensure that we are protected, that our finances are going to be protected as well.
Okay, well, review that show from last time, got into some of the specific documents you need. One of the obvious things people think about when they think of what they're going to do in this life is the whole area of long-term care insurance.
And, right.
And how can we plan for that in our estate planning?
So long-term care. Now, I do not sell long-term care policies, so this is completely unsolicited. I get nothing for it. This is just simply what I have seen in my career and how it works.
And you've had a more elaborate discussion on this with some previous shows.
Yeah, too. Yeah. And so there are past podcasts found at legacyandfaith.com, and so you can go back to the archives. Boy, we've been doing this for 5 years, I think. So there's quite a plethora.
Halfway through, I think we brought that subject.
Yeah, there's quite a library out there of different topics. So long-term care, the philosophy of it is that it's going to be a gap filler to protect your finances. Now, long-term care is not an end-all be-all. So in other words, it is never going to supply enough money to meet all of your care needs. That's not its purpose. But what it is designed to do is to give a tax-free income stream should you meet the long-term care policy's requirements of being needing care and assistance. Then that policy will turn on and tax-free money will start coming to you. So that's pretty powerful. So what would it look like? What type of decisions could be made if we knew that we had $3,000 a month, $5,000 a month, on top of your current retirement or pension or whatever other finances you have. Would that give greater flexibility to your family, whether it's a spouse, kids, or whether friends are going to step in and assist you? Would it give greater flexibility to those who are assisting you and managing your care and need to either care for you at home or move you to another facility? What type of options would then become available, knowing that we have minimally 2 years of an income stream to assist you in that decision? So long-term care can be a very powerful opportunity. Some of the difficulties is that the older policies back in the 90s, it's almost like car insurance. He ever thought, I can't remember what movie it was, to where the woman just rear-ended somebody because they took her parking spot, and the younger people were they said, oh, we're faster than you, we have a faster car, so she hits them, and she goes, yeah, but I'm older and I have better insurance. And so so sometimes that's how we feel about insurance. It's just like, okay, I keep paying this and I get no benefit out of it. That's kind of the old style of long-term care. So the long-term care policy is I pay a monthly fee, and if I die in my sleep, which is what all of our hope is, then I've never used it, and it was just money that was spent on a policy just in case. Well, most policies are no longer built like that. Now there oftentimes are life insurance policies that are underlying it, because long-term care always come from insurance companies. So they deal with life insurance, they deal with the whole gamut, annuities, et cetera, et cetera. So now long-term care is often built in with a life insurance component, so that part of the payment goes to a policy, so that if you never use it, then your beneficiaries are getting a return of some sort of those premiums, maybe not the whole amount, but a reasonable amount, so that it comes back to you. Then if you use the long-term care, it starts to wear down the death policy that would actually pass off. And there's also policies to where you can simply write a $100,000 check, and then you have X many dollars of benefit for the rest of your life. Those policies, I believe, also have similar mechanisms in them, that if you never utilize the policy, that initial money or some of the money can be returned.
Long-term care insurance is expensive.
It is very expensive, yeah. And it is, unfortunately, there's two things that can quickly disqualify you. Number one, the expense. So you just simply can't afford it. Most people look at long-term care policies far too late. Yeah. They need to be looking at them in their upper 40s, young 50s. That is the prime time to look at long-term care and start thinking about when I'm 75 and 80. But rarely do we. So we're barely getting our 401k funded, well,
you get the rude awakening somewhere in there that Medicare isn't going to take care of you if you need a rehab facility or a long-term care facility.
That's right. It's not going to help. That's right. Because if you cannot fully recover, then it's not a covered cost. And so therefore, it does not assist you with home care. It does not assist you with long-term care assistance. So yes, there is a gap there in Medicare. So that's why looking at long-term care policies can be a very good thing. But they're very expensive, and that can disqualify most people. If you hit the age of 65, it's almost impossible to get. So by the time you reach your 60s and you're retiring, you're thinking, oh, I should look at long-term care. Oh, you are so far behind the eight ball. So look at it when you're in your young 50s. And if you're already in your 60s, then talk to your kids about it. Financially, you can be disqualified because it is very expensive. That's where writing the $100,000 check, see how much of a policy benefit you could get. That's why that policy has come into existence. Then the other thing is that you could be disqualified for underwriting for your health. So if you already have conditions, if you're already aging and you already have things like diabetes, or if you're overweight, if you've already had cancer. So there are disqualifying health incidences that you may not be able to. It either jacks up the rate, or they just simply say, sorry, we're not going to give it to you. So it's certainly not The answer for everybody, it is a reasonable answer, because I go back to the first thing I said about it, which is, what would it look like if we had tax-free money coming? And would that give a greater opportunity for the people caring for you to get you into a better facility or into the right care
for yourself?
Or
a lot of people, you know, the dream is to not have to go into a facility at all and want to stay at home.
Yeah, and that is extremely expensive. So that's even more expensive than actually moving. But I've unfortunately watched many clients go through this, and I see what they spend when they're cared for at home. And many long-term care policies have now updated, because it's actually better for the policies to care for somebody at home, because oftentimes it's a family member. You don't need to bring in professionals right out of the gate. So the mathematical equation is, for the insurance company, it's actually cheaper if you're cared for at the beginning at home, versus if you're already into the throes and already having a long-term illness. It can be very expensive to bring in the proper care, the nurses, and everyone else that, you may need for end-of-life comfort. So yes, staying at home is a high priority if it can be afforded, and you need to have a reasonable sum saved up, a couple million dollars, in order to be able to make those decisions without really thinking about it. But, you know, we're sitting here on Krista campus, and there's facilities here. And a lot of places now are moving into a tiered living facility. And I know that Krista has something like that as well.
Started independent living, then you can move into assisted living, and then memory care.
So all in
one-stop shop.
That's right. And so that there's a whole gamut, and I didn't even get paid for that commercial either. And so so that there's a whole gamut of opportunities that, yes, I want to live in a group environment or in a community environment. A lot of times, if you've lost a spouse, moving into a relationship-rich environment
can be
extremely good for somebody. And then they need assistance because they have that health incident. Last week, we talked about that if you have a health incident, it lowers your capacity and ability to live life normally by up to 25%. Then if you have a second one, it lowers it even below 50% of the original starting position. So having that long-term thought process of, I am going to age, and it is potentially likely that I'm going to have a health incident or I'm going to have memory needs, whether it's in your family or not. And so we talked about that if you reach 85, there is a 33% chance you're going to have a reasonable cognitive impairment. So that's a pretty big statistic at 85. So we need to prepare for these things. There's a lot of companies that specialize in this. But if we don't ever talk about it, and if we don't have the right documents prepared, then we can never give the family and our helpers the proper direction on what we want our money to be used on. And that really is the difference in good estate planning versus just standard basic estate planning, that we look at this issue, we ask the right questions, A good estate plan should give your helper, whether it's a child or whether it's somebody on the outside or whether it's a professional person, a good estate plan should give that helper clear insight on what your financial and what your health goals are. Therefore, with a better roadmap, they are able to then do what you desire. That is the, I've lost control of my life, but I'm still in control of my life. So I've lost the ability to write the checks, or I've lost the ability to make all my decisions, but I'm still in control because I had the right questions asked to me so that I could give clear direction on how I want to be cared for. That is probably one of the biggest differences in using a revocable living trust versus a will and financial power of attorney combination. So we need to have the discussion, and you got to take the first step. You got to give us a call. Otherwise, how in the world can we help you and have the conversation to help you and your family out?
We'll take a quick break here. Expecting the unexpected. People are intrigued. They want to know more. How do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and far more, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, a very enlightening discussion today and last time on expecting the unexpected in your estate planning. You can plan for the unexpected, and particularly the health issues that you might face in your life. Some pretty interesting statistics, 75% chance that you will need assistance during your lifetime, but you can work that into your estate planning, Paul. And we were talking about long-term care insurance and facilities. What do you think about researching facilities maybe before you get into this?
Yeah, it's a question that we ask our clients, and they kind of freeze on it, which is, I've never looked at that. So the response is, well, today's a good day to look at it then. And now, I don't have the answers because I don't have that intimacy with clients to be able to tell them which facility to use or not use. That's not my specialty.
Well, it's a reality check, too. Again, yeah. Looking at how expensive some of this can be. I mean, the range can be for like an adult family home, $4,000 or $5,000, but to a full-on
memory
facility,
care, $12,000 a month, if not more.
A month.
Yeah, a month. Mm-hmm. And so, I think the average cost in the Seattle area is someplace between $9,000 and $10,000. I haven't looked at that stat lately, but it's someplace around there. Mm. So it is, I mean, it's going to be $100,000 a year venture. So are you able to write those checks? And if not, what then? So looking at the care, so there's so many different facilities nowadays out there. As a matter of fact, it's a growing business, and I don't think they're keeping up. Here's a big problem, is that many of the good facilities don't even have openings when you go through the healthcare incident. So we were talking about Krista, and I'm not trying to overemphasize their care over anyone else's. It's just an example. There's Aegis, there's Brookwood, there's many other places out there that have the same type of three-tiered system, which is it better to move into a facility under your own free will and cognitive ability so that when you have the health incident, you're already guaranteed the assistance and the room space versus waiting for the health incident that forces you into a place and now we're taking a substandard space because that's the only one that has a room. Mm. So looking at what do you want? There's places that emphasize community. There's places that emphasize activities. There's places that emphasize activities outside of the facility and hire companies to take their residents to outside activities. There's places that emphasize faith in their facility. So what is it that you want in a facility? These are the things that need to be answered so that if indeed we're ever faced with the issue of needing to move you to assist you or provide a safe place to live, and you haven't done it in advance, at least we know what type of things we should be looking for in a facility. And that gives the family greater guidance, again, in choosing it. You may have not said, go to this specific facility at this specific address. What if your spouse needs care at the same time? Is it critically important that you're at the same facility with your spouse? Well, if his or her issues are much more severe than yours, then it takes a facility that has all of those gamuts of services in order to accommodate that request. Do you need to be near one of your children because they're going to take care of you more often or visit you more often than the other? Usually it falls on one child. It is rarely an equally weighted multiple children are stepping up to the plate. In my experience in watching families, one child takes the brunt of caring for parents. So is it necessary to be in a facility that is near their home to save them a lot of travel time versus I have to be very close to my church so that I can get to church versus I want to be in the same community? So all of these different questions need to be looked at and answered before your incident ever occurs. Otherwise, your agent is making a decision on the fly in an emergency based upon the best information. And sometimes that's just not the best decision that can be made.
Well, what are you moving on to? You mentioned kids there a few times. What do you think about the aspect of putting kids on bank accounts, on house titles, other assets in preparation for this potential decline?
Oh, sweet Jesus, don't do it. So, look, this is the poor man's estate planning. So you've heard, or your parents did it, or whatever else, whatever drove you to the mentality of saying, I'll just bring my kids on to my bank account. And so that way, if I ever need help in the future, they're already available. Okay, I understand the thought process. But from an estate planning viewpoint, it is not a wise decision. So number one, this happened in my really early in my career. I was walking through the court's hallway, and I overheard a conversation between an attorney and an elderly woman. And she said, but it's my money. And he said, yes, but your daughter was on the account. Yes, but it was my money and they took my money. Yes, but your daughter was sued. And so because she was on the account, they had the right to take it. So now there's multiple issues here that I don't like kids being on title. So number one, I don't know what their future holds. So let's assume that they're good kids. Let's assume they're not stealing from mom and dad. That's a whole different argument. And it happens. It is sad. It is not right. And somebody brings their kids on, oftentimes because they're manipulated to do it and they don't have the capacity to really stave off
kids
that any longer.
Addict.
And so so let's assume that we have good kids and they're going to go on the account. They're not going to steal from you. Then how do you know that they're not going to go through a divorce? How do you know that they're not going to make a driving mistake? How do you know that they lose their job and all of a sudden they end up in bankruptcy in 2 years later? And now your account, because they're on your account, there is a possibility. It's not absolute, but there is a possibility that that account could be open to their own creditors. So that's a bummer. And that's what happened to this person that I walked by early in my career. The other thing is that when you die, those funds by law automatically belong to that child. So if they start writing checks, if you have a savings account with $100,000 on it and they're a good kid because we established they're going to be a good kid and they start sharing that money because that's their moral obligation. Well, number one, legally it was their money. So did they file gift tax returns? Are they aware of the tax consequences of actually dishing out that money when they think they're just doing the right thing? So there's multiple layers of things that most people are not aware of. If you bring someone onto title of a house, then they don't get what's called a step up in basis. They take Because it was a gift, number one, did you file a gift tax return with the IRS when you put your kid on the bank or when you put your kid on a house? And they lose a significant tax break when they go to sell that home. So putting it on property is probably one of the biggest mistakes I see, because there is a tax problem that occurs to the beneficiary. We could have sold that tax-free depending on how it was used after someone passes away, but we could sell it tax-free. Instead, we've now paid an unnecessary tax because we haven't done good estate planning. Look, the answer is do good estate planning. Don't start bringing your kids on. When you do good estate planning, that is your protection, not can the kids get to the money. So yes, good estate planning will give access to accounts. Good estate planning will protect you. Good estate planning will ensure that the tax benefits that we anticipate receiving will be received by beneficiaries. Good estate planning will then also put a boundary around that if one of the kids goes through a difficult time in life, that it's not going to come back and touch your estate. So putting your kids on assets, specifically homes, very bad idea in almost every circumstance. There's other ways to do it. And so good estate planning is the solution, but you got to take the step. So good estate planning should be able to protect you. And it should answer a lot of these questions that we've brought up today with what do we do to care for you, because we can expect that you're going to have a health incident. We can expect that you're going to have memory and cognitive issues. So let's prepare now and make sure it's done well.
Expecting the unexpected in estate planning, the subject this week. And if you're intrigued by Paul's approach, he has a lot of passion for this, seen a lot of things happen that he wants to help you avoid through good estate planning. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. Past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.